Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Global Health Collective. I'm your host, Shania Bopa. I'm a PhD student, wellness blogger, and co-founder of the GTA nonprofit, the Canadian Courage Project. Season 4 is all about highlighting women from around the world that are living balanced lives while managing a full career and their own personal lives. Balance is possible, and I can't wait for us to hear the inspiration together.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode on the Global Health Collective. I am super excited to be here with Dr. Deborah DiLiberto, an assistant professor of global health at McMaster University. Deborah's experience both in academia in the global health setting has focused on research, but also working with communities and healthcare professionals. And I'm so excited to have this platform to share Deborah's advice to students on how to navigate finding your passion and motivation while successfully creating an impact in global health. Welcome, Deborah. Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thanks, Shania. Thanks for having me. It's really exciting to be able to speak with you. So I guess I'll just start by sort of saying a little bit about how I got to where I am as an assistant professor in global health at McMaster, because I think one of the most important things that people need to know is that it's not a straight path from A to Z. And so I would love to be able to tell you that I had this perfect dream laid out ahead of me, and that's how I ended up, you know, where I am, but absolutely wasn't. So I started sort of in my academic training, I guess, doing an undergraduate degree in arts and sciences at the University of Guelph. And I didn't do really much related to health. So I studied neuroscience and political science, but I didn't know anything about global health or even public health. It wasn't sort of in my field of view. And I had the opportunity after I finished the arts and science program, which was interdisciplinary. So that was sort of really exciting to me because I got to see a lot of different views of things. But I did sort of a series of service learning experiences in Latin America. And that really started to show me what this thing called global health could be. And they didn't even have a term for it at the time, but it was an opportunity for me to see what it was like to work in low resource settings and to work with different people and different healthcare providers and what the possibilities were for improving health and well-being for people sort of, you know, worldwide. So it was really exciting. And then I still didn't know, oh, that I could actually study global health. Like this could be a thing that I could do as a career. And so I went and worked with the government of Ontario and not really related to health at all. But I had a really great training program in project management, which ended up being a really great foundation for the rest of my career. So I was able to learn about projects and how to organize them and manage them and do budgets and reporting and all of these really sort of transferable skills. And then after that, I realized, I can't stay in the government. This isn't really what I want to do. And this isn't how I see my life going. So then I applied to do a master's in, it wasn't even called global health at the time. It was called public health in developing countries. And it was at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine in the UK. And that's where I really started to understand what this thing called global health is and what the possibilities are for a career in global health. And after that, I had the really great fortune of getting a job with a malaria research group that was based in Uganda. And so I lived in Uganda for 3 years working on different research projects to improve the diagnosis and treatment of malaria. And while I was there, I became interested in doing a PhD. And I really wanted to understand more about how we design and evaluate complex health service interventions and how we come to know what methods, research methods do and how they produce evidence and how we use that evidence to make decisions. And so I went back to the UK and I did a PhD there. And it was really exciting. It was a really fun time to be able to focus in on a specific topic and to lead my own work. And then after that, I had the great fortune of coming to McMaster. And I started in a postdoc position with the Global Health Program. And then after a couple of years, I transitioned into an assistant professor position. And so it was really this exciting, you know, I guess it was 20 years from undergrad to where I am now, through lots of different turns and twists and ups and downs, to be able to say that now I work in global health as a professor, and I'm able to do this work as a career.
I think your journey is so interesting, and especially having the opportunity to work in countries outside of Canada, understand how healthcare systems work outside of Canada. And that's one thing I personally really loved about learning in the Global Health Master's program is just the way that our perspectives can shift when actually learning from individuals who live in other countries. And it's honestly something I didn't have experience learning about all of my undergrad. And that is one of the most unique qualities I can say about the master's program. But one thing you said that I think is such an important concept for students to remember is that there is no such thing as this ideal path. There is no such thing as one end goal that is the perfect end goal that you should strive for. Because when you do that, you add this internal and external pressure on yourself that then has an effect on the way that you are perceiving the life ahead of you. I think one thing as students, we create this goal. So for example, my goal would be finish a PhD at this age, at this time, and do this right after. I think when you set that goal, you don't enjoy the process and you're just constantly striving for what's ahead. And I was reading this book by Brené Brown. It's called Atlas of the Heart. And in the book, she mentioned that when we fixate on goals or specific, I guess, ideals, we put ourselves in a position of not feeling joy or feeling happiness in every moment of every day. And you have to physically choose joy. And you have to physically make the effort to choose joy in that. And there's barriers that come with choosing joy as well. But
yeah, I think that, you know, it's so true. And I think it's something that I really try to emphasize with students when I meet with them or in our global health program, because I think so many students come in and they're, you know, the program is, we're blessed to have really engaged and really smart and really articulate students. And they're really goal oriented. That's something that I've noticed over the years, is that they really come in and we have meetings and discussions and they've, okay, I'm going to do a PhD, or I want to do research, or I'm going to med school, or I'm going to law school. And I try to advise them to maybe see what other possibilities are. And the story that I give is sort of the reverse of having goals. So I was born and raised in Hamilton, and I couldn't wait to get out of Hamilton. Like I, you know, as soon as I finished high school, I finished high school a semester early so that I could go backpacking with my sisters around Europe, because I just wanted to be out of Hamilton. It was just not cool to me. I didn't want to be here. I was like, nah. Yeah. So I thought, okay, I'm going to do everything I can do so that I don't live in Hamilton. And lo and behold, I live in Hamilton now, and I
welcome back.
And I came right back full circle, and I love my job and I love being here. And if I had sort of fixated and said, well, I'm never going to move back to Hamilton, then I wouldn't have this opportunity and this life that I have now, which I really love. So it's kind of the flip side of, you know, if you have this goal that I'm absolutely going to do this as a career, or this is a thing I have to achieve by a certain point, you may actually be cutting yourself off from a lot of really wonderful opportunities and different paths that you can take.
I agree. And I think one thing for me is having a support system or having individuals in your radius that also view life in the way that you hope to view life. So I think if you think of yourself as an optimistic person and you hope to just be a little bit more optimistic and a little bit more, I guess, living in the moment, I guess, perspective, rather than fixated on a goal, surround yourself with people who have similar interests and similar goals like that. And Deborah, for you, in your journey of your entire, if you like were to look at your life on a piece of paper, how did you find the individuals that inspired you, motivated you, and kept you on track with just living life with joy?
Yeah. Well, I think, I think I would have to start with probably with my family. And I mean, I'm sure maybe lots of people start there, but my mom and dad, when I told them that I was leaving a permanent job in the government of Ontario and I was selling my house and I was going to grad school in the UK to study this thing that they had never heard about. They thought that I was, you know, that I was absolutely out of my mind, but they were really supportive and they thought, okay, well, if this is something that you want to do, then go for it and do it. And then we'll support you and we'll be here. And when I, you know, called my dad, and he reminds me of this story all the time. I called him during first term and I was taking an economics course and it was just not my thing. And I was not doing well in it. And I was crying. I was like, what have I done? He just reminded me that this was a choice that I had made and something that I was really excited about, and that there were going to be hard times, that you keep going and you keep going and you will get to the end. And then you'll have the opportunity for another choice or another decision and another path to take. And it was the same sort of thing that happened when I was doing my PhD. And you go through these moments and you're thinking, what have I done? But I voluntarily signed up for this torture. Are you serious?
I feel
and
that
then, you know, my parents would be there and they were saying, you can do this. You just take it one day at a time. We're here to support you. You know, you have the skills and the talents and the capabilities to do this. It's just hard right now. So you keep going. So I think having that support system where, and you know, at one point my mom said, well, you could just quit. You know, there wasn't ever this pressure that was, you absolutely have to do this, or this is the expectation that we have for you as a person. It was, the expectation was that I would learn something and I would grow from it and I would be able to, you know, use that as a stepping stone in the next part of my life. So I think that that has been really important to me. And the same thing, I have two sisters and they were all along that journey with me as well, and always supportive and being there. So I think that core support. And then I also have the really great fortune of being married to a super cool guy who does similar type of work in international development. And we've been together for a really long time. And so as we were sort of moving together in our careers, we were able to keep each other accountable to what was really important to us around working with people and working for people and working in a way that promotes health and wellness. And he works in climate change. So I think that that was also really helpful, because when it gets really hard and you see other people around you who are having successes or making more money or getting really important jobs, you kind of, it's easy to lose focus on why you're doing things. So having someone in the trenches who really understood my motivations and my reasons for doing this type of work has been really helpful.
That's great to hear. And out of curiosity, do you have any daily practices or habits that you do or that you have been doing for the past 5 or 10 years that allow you to stay grounded and focused on those goals? Because I think for me, sometimes it's super important that I have to hear someone say, Shania, remember your focus, remember to stay focused, remember these are your values or your pillars. But I find sometimes writing it down and like talking to myself and having that conversation super important for me.
Yeah. So it's really funny. I do a lot of sort of self-talk, and it's not even that I say it out loud, but I think a lot about people. So when I'm doing something, I like to put people or a person in that, in the field of view of the work that I'm doing. So when I'm trying to design a lecture, I put the students, I try to say, okay, I can't necessarily put myself in the students' shoes because I don't know what it's like to be a student right now. And it's, you know, every sort of year and cohort is different, but I can say, oh, I'm doing this for the students. And what would make this interesting for students? Or how can I make this better for students? Or if I'm working on a paper, I think, okay, if I were someone, I find academic journals so important to the work that I do. And, you know, I use them all the time. So if I was reading this, or this, I know someone else is going to be reading this, why would it be important to them? Or how does this going to be relevant or useful to someone else? And for me, I'm a really people focused and people centered person. So having a person or a group of people as part of the goal for the work that sort of the daily tasks that add up, I think is really helpful.
And it sounds like fostering human connection is a pillar of yours, and it grounds you in both your life and your career, and so professionally and personally. And in terms of being a woman in global health, in academia, how did you blend your pillars and your personal pillars to your work? And what was maybe a barrier or a challenge that you had in remaining person focused and patient-centered, and patient-centered, for example, if you were working within the healthcare research realm?
Yeah, so I think one of the barriers to doing that is probably myself and my reflection on the expectations or the negative stereotypes that society has built around women being people-centered and women leaning into the parts of themselves that are caring, that are compassionate, that are focused on well-being and on bringing people up. And I have always struggled with balancing sort of that part of myself that is part of my sort of womanhood and my feminine aspect of myself that I hold dear and I think is really important to who I am, with the other side of me that is really ambitious and really focused and really driven to achieve things. And I think that the barrier is being able to acknowledge that those stereotypes exist and to say, okay, that might be what someone else thinks, but I don't know what someone else thinks. I can never know what someone else thinks. So I have to sort of take it on myself to be myself and be true to myself and not to worry what someone else is going to think about the way that I approach a topic or a problem or the way that I interact with people. So I think it's really, it's hard for women and especially for young women because there are so many expectations around who we're supposed to be and what we're supposed to be and what we're not supposed to be and how we're supposed to act and not act and what this means and what that means. But having sort of the bit of experience now, have been able to have worked with lots of different people in lots of different places, is to know that those are generalizations and we can't take them on as women as being the thing that defines us. And so we have to find our own unique path through all of that noise to say, this is who I am and I'm going to be true to what that means to me.
And I think it's particularly difficult for women who both have that instinctual and culturally crafted ideal of who they should be and what their role needs to be in the community or in the place that they're in. And so for myself, like, for example, my friends and I talk about it all the time, finding the balance between having this like amazing, fulfilling career that we see in our heads, but then balancing that with being a mom and being a good mom. And how do we even think to create this like perfect recipe of what that looks like for ourselves, because what works for me isn't going to work for someone else and isn't going to work for the next person. So having, I personally have that internal conversation all the time, like, I'm going to finish my PhD at this age, I'm going to do this at this age. Where do I make time for that aspect of myself that I really do want to fulfill, which is being a mom and being a partner and living that other life and finding balance? Do you have any recommendations on how you kind of went through that internal dialogue, perhaps in your 20s?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I think I was maybe lucky. I don't know if lucky is the right word, but in my 20s, I was not interested in having kids. Like, that was not on my field of view. I knew that I was interested in having a family and doing that, but I didn't have any expectations about when that was going to happen. And I was probably naive at the time because I didn't really understand a lot about, chose not to think about biology and timelines and what that means for women and fertility, but it wasn't really something that was on my goals at that time during my 20s, and wasn't even really my 30s. It wasn't until my late 30s that I was like, oh, okay, I would like to start a family. So so that was, you know, a bit of the lucky part. But then I think once I decided, my partner and I decided that we did want to have a family, it's that case of life shrinking or expanding according to the expectations you set for yourself. So I was worried, of course, about what it would be like to go on maternity leave and to step out of work for an extended period of time and to come back and all of those really sort of technical sort of things. But I wasn't worried about my capacity to do that because I know that life shrinks or expands. And so if I thought about this as a growth part of my life, as an opportunity to expand my life, expand my joy, expand my experiences, then that to me was really exciting. And it's the same way, you know, when I thought about moving to different countries and living in different cultures, they all were going to be things that were only going to enrich my life. And it's not that they're not hard and they're not challenging and it comes with ups and downs, but I think it's important to not think that, oh, if I add this thing into my life, like a family or whatever it might be, that that somehow is going to make the balance harder. It just makes more opportunity for you to be fulfilled in your life. So I don't really think of things like work-life balance because I don't really think that there is a balance. Like if you think about it, truly, if you work a minimum of 40 hours a week, if you're in a full-time job outside of the house, which I am, when my son comes home from school or from daycare, he's only with us for 2 hours before he goes to sleep. So I'm at work for 8 hours and I'm with him for 2 hours. So that's not a balance, but it is a balance in terms of my commitment to being with him. So when I'm with him for those 2 hours, I'm with him for those 2 hours and I'm not doing anything else and I'm making the most of that. And I think that that's sort of where that opportunity comes in to be really fulfilled. And I don't know. And I think it's really fun. It's really fun to be able to have these different parts of us that we can lean into. And I love writing academic papers and I love making Play-Doh. And that's totally cool for me to be able to do those two things. And they don't make me less of one or more of the other in any way.
I think it's also your ideals and your perception creates a reality. So I think for you, because you perceive life as you do without that, I guess, quote unquote, perfect recipe for work-life balance, you are then able to fulfill all of the roles that you see necessary and be satisfied with that on a personal level. And so I think from that, a piece of advice I'm learning from this conversation alone is that if I create the ideals, I can either live those ideals out to its fullest potential or not. And either or, it's a decision and it's a choice. So I think from what I'm gathering, your perspective is grounded in you have a choice and you choose to think a certain way or you choose to do certain things with an intention. And the 2 hours that you're spending with your son are intentional 2 hours. Like it is intentional time. So if you're spending 8 hours at work on an academic paper or teaching, that's intentional time that you choose to enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's really part of it is this choice. Like we all have choices and we have choices about what we prioritize. And, you know, when people say, oh, I'm really busy or I don't have time for that, it's just that that's not a priority for you. So I'm as busy as the next person, and other people might have more things on their agenda that makes them more busy from a number of things that take up their time. But I could say, well, I'm really busy because I work for 8 hours and I spend 2 hours with my son and my partner. And that makes me really busy because those are, you know, a long chunk of time that I'm really dedicated to putting my best self forward. So I think it's all about choosing and prioritizing what's important. There are so many things I would love to do, but they're not ultimate priorities for me. And it even comes down to things like motherhood. Like I love spending time with my son and I love doing things with him, but I also love doing things without him. Like there's also a lot of my life that I love to do that makes me me, that are hobbies outside of being a mom and being a professor that are important to me. And I sometimes can do them and sometimes I can't, but there's a few that I always prioritize because they are important to me and they're part of this life. So I can't do 101 things and I'm not about to try because I think that would just make me frazzled, but I intentionally choose the things that I want to spend my time on.
Do you believe in the perspective that you can do, you can have everything you want in life, but just not all at the same time? Or do you believe in the perspective that you can't have everything in life, but you have to enjoy the things that you do have?
I think you can have everything you want in life. It just depends on what you want. So, you know, I think that, so I guess part of it is that, you know, that first sort of sentence that you can have everything you want in life, just not all at the same time, which is probably true. Like there's a lot that I would like to be doing right now, but it's just not possible. Like there's just things that aren't possible for me to do because of either, you know, my job constraints or my life constraints or my financial constraints or whatever it might be. But I can have everything I want if I choose the things that I want and I put my effort into them. So I want to have a fulfilling career and I want to have a fulfilling family life and I want to be as healthy as possible and I want to be a contributing member of my community. And so I can do those things and that's everything I want. Would I also like to go on a sunny beach vacation? Yes. Is that possible right now? No. You know, would I also like to have 1800 hobbies because I'm always interested in everything? Yes. But is that financially or time possible right now? No, but that's okay because I'm fulfilled with the other things that I'm choosing to do.
And that's how I felt. So I wrote a children's book. It's called Gherk and Bianca, the story of the gut-brain connection. Yeah, but one of my things was how can I create an environment where I'm fulfilling a hobby, but then it could potentially aid me in my professional career. So health communications, knowledge translation is an area in which I'm focused in for my PhD research and just like life research, but how can I tie the two together? And so that was one thing I found really helpful is trying to create a circular model of how you can connect certain things in your life to then get, I guess, a couple things checked off on your list if you do have a list of things you want to accomplish and time-wise. And I think my next question for you on that note is, what is one piece of advice you would give to your younger self, say 23-year-old Deborah?
So I alluded to it at the beginning. So I have probably two pieces of advice. And one is that it's not a straight line from A to Z. So success is not a straight line from A to Z. And when I was an undergrad, I was, you know, trying to do all the things. I was trying to get really good grades. I was involved in student government and student politics. And I was doing all of these things because I was really, you know, I really wanted to have a great, set myself up for a great career and a great job. And all of those things were really important, but I sort of thought, oh, well, I'm going to finish undergrad. And then by the time I'm 30, I'm going to be in the C-suite of some organization. I don't know. Like, I just kind of thought I was going to take over the world, which is exciting. And it pushed me to do a lot of things. But now looking back, I realize that it is not a straight line from A to Z. And success does not go linearly. It is really a twists and turns. And we go around and around in circles. And sometimes we go back to where we started. And then we realize that we need to make different choices. So I think I would tell, 23-year-old me to just like trust the process. Just trust yourself and trust your instincts and keep working hard. Like don't take your foot off the gas, but don't worry about all of the little things. Like it will work out somehow. I can't tell you how it's going to work out. I can't tell you what it's going to look like, but it will work out. So that might be my first piece of advice. And then my second piece of advice would be you're doing great. Like I would just say to my younger self, you're doing great. And may not necessarily be for 23-year-old me, but maybe for like 26 or 27-year-old me. After I finished undergrad and, a few years later, when I had a number of friends who were graduating from med school or graduating from law school or finishing MBAs, and they were getting these great jobs and buying houses and, you know, getting married and doing all of these things that I thought I needed to be doing as well. And instead I was, you know, like packing up my bags and moving to England to go to grad school, you know, just things that were really off of the beaten path. And I think I would just say, like, you're doing great. You make your own choices and your own choices are great, and just keep going.
Thank you. And I think I am taking that advice as I'm hearing it. And I think one thing I find myself as a student and as just a young person in a PhD program right now that I didn't see myself doing at this point in my life, it just kind of happened and I took the opportunity, but living life with ease and approaching situations with ease and being gracious and being, I think, grateful with everything that's coming your way and appreciating like the smallest of moments can really just enhance your perspective on the life ahead of you, but also your mood and how you feel on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think that gratitude and graciousness and gravitas are really important for us to have for ourselves and for the world, because there are so many opportunities for the world to knock us down. You know, social media has changed a lot, but back when it was really sort of, people weren't talking about the filters. People weren't talking about behind the scenes of the perfect images on social media and what goes on in people's real lives. It's really easy to compare yourself to that and think, I'm not doing enough, or I'm not good enough, or, you know, my life could be better. And so I think we need to have a lot of gratitude for where we are and what we do have and what we are doing, and a lot of graciousness for where other people are and where they're at. And to think, okay, every person's experience is so unique and everyone is going through their own ups and downs. And as we approach the way that we interact with people, and I think, you know, the way I interact with students and with colleagues, is to have that graciousness for acknowledging where people are at, being with them where they're at, and, you know, helping them to get to where they want to go, but to just be gracious and kind. And that doesn't mean that you can't also be ambitious and driven and focused. They're not dichotomies, but the way that we approach how we just take on life's ups and downs, I think, is really important, to just kind of take a breath and just say, okay, I can manage this and I can work through this, and we're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, I am going to share with everyone listening, these are three quotes that I definitely ground my daily actions in. And I shared these three quotes in my valedictorian speech a couple months ago. But one of them was, surround yourself with people who would mention your name in a room full of opportunities, and people who believe in you more than you believe in yourself sometimes. Number two is, there is no such thing as competition between your peers, because the greatest leaders in the world actually bring everyone to the top, quote unquote, with them. And so that is one thing as a student I wish I heard in my first or second year of university. You aren't competing with the people around you. The world is a very collaborative space. Collaborating with your peers, asking questions, sharing resources can actually enhance the learning environment in your day-to-day life. And then number three, this one my dad has raised me on, is just, the world is your classroom. Thinking about how you can learn from experiences as opposed to how you're learning from a textbook, I think both are very important, but really valuing both of those. And there's no wasted experience. There's no such thing as a wasted opportunity. There's no such thing as a waste of time, because time is something that you perceive. It's a it's a personal perspective. How I perceive time and the value of time is something so different from someone else. So remembering that as a student, I think as well, in relation to what Deborah has just mentioned.
Yeah, and I have to say that not seeing your peers and other people as competition is really important. And I think it's really hard because we always see opportunities as limited resources. And we think, well, if that person has that, maybe it means that I can't have that. Or if that person gets that job or that, practicum or that placement, it means that I can't do it. But it's actually, the world is full of limitless opportunities. It's how we define what an opportunity is and how we come to understand how we can find an opportunity in the most simple things and the most simple experiences. And that idea of seeing every, experience as a learning opportunity and to see the world as your classroom, I think is really important. And it's one of the things that I valued so much about my education, like all through it, undergrad, grad school, and PhD, was, yes, I learned a lot of stuff in class and textbooks, and I was a good student, but I learned so much from people, and I learned so much from that socialization of being with other like-minded people who came to this, schooling with all their different experiences. And we had this opportunity to talk and to collaborate and to hear other people's ideas and how they worked through problems, how they came to different solutions. To me, that was the most important part of academia. And it's one of the things that's so nice about, being in the Global Health Program now, is that we are this collaborative of faculty members and of students, that we do try to learn from each other's experiences. And I think that that's really important. And it's hard. And it's really hard to not, just say, my goal here is just to get 99.9%. But especially in grad school, where your goal should be to get 100% experience. That should be the goal.
Yeah. And on that note, Deborah, do you have a quote that you live by? Or something that grounds you?
Yeah, so I actually do have a quote that I live by, and it's an Italian quote, so I'll say it in Italian, and then I'll explain it. So the quote is, "Che va piano, va sano e va lontano," which roughly, translates to something around with calmness and tranquility, you can get to your goals, or the real sort of translation is slow and steady wins the race. And I first heard that quote when I was leaving to go backpacking across Europe with my sisters when I was just finished high school. And my Sicilian grandfather said this quote to me. And I think he was trying to say, stay safe, girl, and, be careful. But it's stuck with me, and it's actually stuck with my whole family. And it's something that we reflect on, that going slow and going steady, or being calm and having tranquility, will get you to the end. And it's not a race to some finite point. They say life is not a sprint or whatever. There's no finite point of success or of happiness or of accomplishment. It's life is this ongoing journey. And so go slow and go steady, and you will get to where you need to be.
I agree with that. And I think also be daring in the process. Slow and steady, but take risks, because you have absolutely nothing to lose in the grand scheme of life.
Yeah. Leap and the net will appear.
Exactly. And I want to wrap up this episode on such a positive note. Thank you, Deborah, for your time, your energy, your perspective. I know, honestly, for myself, chatting with you today was really great and grounding. And I hope for any students out there listening, whether you're in the Global Health Program or not, it doesn't matter. Thinking about the concepts from today's episodes will allow you to find that little piece of joy that you may be looking for in your day, especially in the world that we're living in right now, virtual learning and the harsh winter, especially if you're in Canada. So thank you, Deborah. And I appreciate you, and I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much, Shania. It's been my pleasure to be with you today. Mm-hmm.